Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of the Security Repo Podcast. I'm thrilled to have an awesome guest with us today. We are here and joined by Jason Street, who is a big name in the world of security. You may know Jason from various documentaries, including the National Geographic series, Breakthrough Cyber Terror, or from the recent Wired video, Hacker Answers Questions from Twitter. He is the author of the book, Dissecting the Hack, the Forbidden Network. But what you probably know Jason for the most is that he is one of the best bank robbers in the world, and I'm actually being serious for that. I had the absolute privilege of meeting Jason in Kazakhstan, of all the places. In tribute, I'm wearing my Kazhakstan shirt, which was the name of the conference, best name of the conference I've ever had. But Jason, so good to see you again, and thanks so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure. It's great seeing you again. And that was an amazing conference. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, shout out to Kazakhstan. I mean, it's one of the conferences I went to, and I just remember seeing it. I was like, that name is too good. I have to try and go to that conference. And then then it ended up being this one of the most epic conferences I think I've been to. Really cool. And as we're just talking, one of the best trips afterwards that we did a tour for about 3 days all around Kazakhstan. And
so, event organizers in the US, if you're listening, there's an idea for you. Give us a grand tour around your city if we come.
Exactly. You'll get Jason. Well, I want to start off, Jason, and I kind of want to start off at the beginning of the podcast, but also at the beginning in general. Why did you get into penetration testing? Why did you get into hacking? What's the story about kind of?
Well, I always like to let people know, it's like, I never got into hacking. No one gets into hacking. Hacking is how we were born. Everyone on this planet was born a hacker. It's like, if you look at any three-year-old, it's like, and see how they react. Why is that way? Why is this? Who's that? What do they do? Why? It's that innate curiosity. It's like a lot of people, and especially it's like lately I've been getting really steamed about it, is that a lot of people have been like trying to gatekeep with by making hacking, equating it with computers. It's like, which is ridiculous. Hacking has nothing to do with computers whatsoever. Hacking has zero to do with the computer. Computers are the new medium that hackers are using to explore and to exercise their curiosity on. Nikola Tesla was a hacker who used electricity. Ada Lovelace created the first programming language. It's like before there were even computers. Leonardo da Vinci created scuba gear and a bulletproof car. Hacking has nothing to do with computers. It's just that innate curiosity. So I've always had that curiosity, that drive, and that stubborn refusal to accept reality in the way that everybody was telling me that it was. One of my favorite sayings is, it's like, I never let reality get in the way of me trying to accomplish something. And so that's hacking. I got into information security, the job of hacking and security, in 2000, because I'm old. And I got into that, and I started realizing that I could do security and computers with no one shooting at me. Because I used to be in physical security and law enforcement, and I got shot at. So it was a much easier switch, and I was very happy about it. And I fell in love with it, because I passionately love bad guys having bad days. I come from a very traumatic childhood, and it's like, and instead of becoming the monster that I was raised to be, I actually was broken in such a wonderful way where it's like, I want to make sure that doesn't happen to anybody else. I want to make sure those bad guys are punished. And so I've always taken it from the security standpoint. People are like, what did you break into when you were hacking? I didn't start robbing people until I had permission. It's like, I didn't start doing the network intrusions until there was a contract. I got into the offensive side, the pen testing side, back in around 2010. 2009, 2010, I was inspired by a really horrible person, but he does very good work, and inspired me to like start testing the defenses that I had been making as a blue teamer. And I decided to start testing it by, you know, trying to break into it. And that's when I found out I was really good at robbing banks. And so I started doing that more and more.
As one does.
That is an awesome. I love that definition of hacking. It's something I've been telling people for a while. It's like hacking was before computers. It's people figuring stuff out. I know you have must have a million stories from all of these exploits or things, at least 100,000 stories you can tell publicly from getting in. I'm curious, is there anyone like those stories that pops out in your brain? Like, hey, I had to think on my feet and it was like, I had to call an audible last minute. Something that surprised you out in the field that just, you know, sticks out in your memory?
The one time I created an EPA incident because I was breaking into a biochemical research company and the guy decided to lie to me about saying that the dumpster that I wanted to dive into may have had some kind of waste or something, but it wasn't properly marked. And so I had to put it on my report, which led to him losing his job and the EPA being called out, because you don't lie about stuff like that on an audit. I'm there to help you. I'm your advocate, not your adversary. It's like you shouldn't say stuff like that. Actually, I think the one that surprised me the most, it's like that I like was legitimate because I was surprised that it worked, was I was robbing a state treasury in the United States, and they gave me this ridiculous amount of narrow scope of, I literally could not talk to anybody coming out of this office building because I didn't know if they were an employee for the state treasury. That was their justification. I could only stay in the lobby. I could only go in after 5:30 in the evening. I could only hang out in the lobby. The only person I was allowed to contact was the cleaning crew if they were in a public area. So I had to wait 2 hours, and it's like, and then once I talked to the cleaning crew, they weren't a direct employee of the state treasury. So I could not lie to them, but I could talk to them and ask them to let me into their office so I could break in. And I had this on video and I've used it in some of my talks by telling the truth in a very dishonest way. I convinced the cleaning crew person to let me into their office. It's like, I was actually surprised it worked, but I did not lie once during that thing. And it's like, and they let me in.
I love that phrase, truth in a dishonest way.
Yeah. That's for sure.
I don't filter very well, and I don't like lying. It's like, I tell people I get paid to lie professionally. I don't do it for free, but in actuality I do. Everybody lies. It's like, but one of the things that's a problem with me, especially when I'm in a social area, when I'm not in character, when I'm not masking, is the fact that it's like society is built on doing social lies. It's like to make people, you know, comfortable. And so, but I still try to limit. So it's like, I try to be honest in a dishonest way a lot of times, where I'll try to deflect what the question they're asking, because I know it's going to hurt their feelings if I answer correctly.
Love your hat, by the way, Mac.
My hat?
Yeah, I absolutely love it.
Well, I'm having a bad hair day, right? So I was just like, look, I couldn't get it to come on. So I was just like, do you know what? I'm just going to put a beanie on. So there it is. I'm wearing a beanie today.
You rock it well.
Thank you. Well, I want to hone in a little bit, because I'm really curious still about kind of the start of the journey. And I wanted to know, you know, robbing a bank, you know, even if it is in a legal sense, and even if you kind of have permission to be there in a way, it still must be incredibly nerve-wracking. Do you remember the first time where you had an assignment for a bank, you know, to try and go in there and compromise some machines or get into data? What was the first kind of bank assignment that you had, and what was that like, knowing that this is kind of like the highest level of security that there should be?
All right. Well, I'm not normal. It's like, first of all, so it's like, people need to understand. It's like, I survived my first murder attempt when I was 10. I was homeless and living behind a dumpster when I was 16. It's like, so there was no nerve-wracking, like, oh, I'm going to rob a I don't get that kind of thing. It's like, you know, there's supposed to be that self-preservation instinct that people have. Mine is extremely low for some reason. Like it in Kazakhstan, when I was like climbing on the cliff,
everybody was freaking out
for some reason. And I'm like right there on the edge of the cliff taking some great selfies and pictures. And people are like, I can't believe he's right. And it was very peaceful to me because I really enjoyed the scenery and the view. But others, for some reason, seemed odd.
My self-preservation instincts kicked in for you when you were doing that. I remember that very well. Everyone was freaking out.
I don't get nervous. It's like when I'm breaking in or when I'm doing something like that. It's very hilarious because what I get nervous about is not doing a good enough job. It's like, I have very low self-esteem and it's like, and I deal with a lot of imposter syndrome. So it's like, oh, this is the one where everybody's going to find out I'm a fraud. This is where I'm not going to be able to do good. It's like the clients are going to be unhappy because I wasn't successful. These are the things that it's just not going to work out. And about 15 minutes before I need to start, it's go time, I then just go, hey, okay, it's going to be what it's going to be. And so I mask up and it's like, and I just go with it and I just take over and I just go in and do it.
Well, I'm curious, as you've been doing this for a while, you billion tips and tricks that you've picked up. Yes. But in the bigger sense, you talked about gatekeeping earlier.
Oh yes.
People that are trying to get in, what would be the advice you'd have first? Just what ground level, what you should probably know before you even start down the journey, and two, how, what you should be expecting from gatekeeping and how to get around it. I know that's a lot of question, but
I will say to get started in one of the things that I tell people is like the funny thing about gatekeepers in this industry is I'm always like, mother, we're hackers. F the gate, jump the fence, go under the fence, go around it, circumvent it. There's nothing should be stopping us. And the gatekeepers are the insecure ones. That's who they are. They're the insecure ones, the ones that, oh, I suffered, so therefore everybody else has to suffer, or I feel not good about my stuff, so I want to make other people feel worse, or I don't feel good unless other people are less. It's like, and so who cares about those people anyway? It's like, so this industry and any industry, honestly, the more diverse it is, the better it will be. And especially in scientific research, in hacking research, it's like security, it's like all these things, the more diverse voices you get, the better. And I'm not talking just about, you know, ethnicity, or it's like sexuality or gender, none of that. I'm talking about people that were like a restaurateur for 10 years. It's like, or a valet, or in marketing. It's like, and they wanted to go into security. Those different life stories shaded their aspects, shaded how they see the world, and will make your team see things in a different light that you may not necessarily see because of your background, your economic status, your upbringing, from where you're from. So always understand that you always have something to contribute. You always have something to contribute because your story and your perceptions are different than everybody else's in the room and just as valid. It doesn't matter if I've been on a stage, it's like, or not. You have just as much information. You deserve just to be on that stage just as well as I do. And you have just as much information and things to share, and you should be sharing them. One of the things I tell people is like, I am tired of seeing the same faces up on stage. We need more people getting up there and realizing that they have something to contribute to this community as well.
I want to drive the conversation a little bit back to some of the assignments that you have. Because I'm so curious, and there's so many things that
that I've heard you say that I've really taken on board that I love. But I, one of the things is you have certain tricks that you use on nearly every penetration test that you do when you are talking about it. It's certain things that seem to always work. I wonder if you could share maybe a few of those things that kind of that help you break past barriers, that gain you trust, or that people kind of let you in to places where they shouldn't have. What are some of the like tricks, the good old standards that you use in there? I wonder if you can share some of them, if you're allowed.
One of the things that I think that people need to realize is that I don't, when I do my job, when I breaking in and I'm robbing someone, it's like, I'm not doing social engineering. It's like, I'm not going after their, you know, people talk about all those fancy words about facial expressions and micro expressions and all that crap, body language. I understand human nature. It's like, I'm on the spectrum, and it's like, and I was masking before I knew what the word was. It's like, and when I was little, it's like, I had to read people very well because normal people are frightening. It's like, you know, it's like, so you've got to like adjust and try to figure out where they're coming from, what they're expecting and what they're looking for. So the reason why I'm so successful at robbing places in all over the world, and like, I think it's been like 5 continents so far, is because of the fact that I'm not attacking the person or their culture. I'm attacking human nature. There is no different. The society likes to sell us on different. So what I do is I go in and I go into the basic instinct. I come in relaxed. I'm not making eye contact with a lot of people. It's like, and some people I am making eye contact with, but it's not an eye contact like, oh, are they watching me? It's eye contact like, oh, and you raise your eyes a little bit and you raise your eyebrows up like, oh, hi, like you're happy to see them. You make that happen and they're not understanding what you're doing, but subconsciously, on a subconscious level, they're like, oh, they will respond to that. It's like, so I'm going after their subconscious. I'm going after the back of their mind, where we talk about our self-preservation and our herd mentality, how that operates. It's like, so I'm going in. When someone comes up to me, one of the first things I do is to make sure I say hello first. It's like I initiate conversation because that puts them off. It's like I go in and I am smiling and I am happy. It's like, and I'm so, and I also leaning forward a little bit and I keep my arms open wide. It's like, I show that I have an open stance where it's like, I've got nothing to hide. I'm just having a good old time robbing you. It's like, you know, it's like, that's, you know, it's just, that's how it does. It's like, I have robbed so many banks, and while I'm waiting for the teller to let me go to the next teller, I've literally sat in chairs and just spinned in the chair and just did a little twirlies in the chair just because, you know, it was fun. And who does that during a bank robbery, right? It's like, it's not regular behavior. It's like, so, and it makes people think, it's like, and I tell people, it's like, and I mean it sincerely, I'm adorable. I try to be adorable. It's like, when I was in my 20s, I was not so adorable. It's like, I do my best now to make people see that I'm harmless and adorable and not a threat and not someone that's going to do something bad. It's like, and that's what it's all about. You get that kind of, and there, it's not something you're trying to sell. It's not something you're trying to push on them. It's just something that you're projecting that they pick up on. And a lot of people like to come at me when they have the negative comments, and they've got plenty, it's like, well, yeah, it's like, you're really self-confident because it's like, you know, you're not going to go to jail. And that is one of the, speaking of adorable, because that is one of the most adorable comments ever, because I used to work in physical security and law enforcement. I've never met a criminal who went and committed a crime because they knew they were going to get caught. All of them were like, oh, I'm never getting caught. They were, yeah. They have more self-confidence in their pinky toe than I've got in my whole entire fiber of my being. It's like the Dunning-Kruger effect is like off the charts with those people. It's like I tell people, it's like when I was back in the service, I was like, criminals are stupid. If they weren't stupid, they wouldn't be criminals, or they'd be in white collar crime where the real money's at. Okay. It's like, because that's what it's about. It's like, no one goes in there knowing that they're going to get caught or trying to get caught. They're all self-confident. They're all, and I wish I could say that I use these different kind of like tricks. It's like, I usually go in the afternoons. It's like, but honestly, most of it is I'm going in with a total vibe of I'm not worried. I have no fear. It's like, oh, I will give you this one good trick. This is something every pen tester should do when they're doing a physical engagement. Bring a candy bar. I cannot stress this enough. It's like, if you're diabetic, bring some kind of other something. It's like, bring a snack inside your jacket or your shirt. This is important. And this is, once again, human nature. As soon as you break in and you get into the internal area, you first thing that you do is you go to the break room, grab some water, get some water, grab your snack, sit down at the table and eat it and drink. The reason being is, this is human nature. When you break in, even though you've got a signed engagement letter and you know you're supposed to be there, your adrenaline is surging. Your adrenaline is pumping. You are in a state of fight or flight because your brain knows you're not supposed to be in this area. They know that you could get caught, and they're going over different scenarios of bad things happening to you. So what you need to do immediately is you need to start having receptors come in saying, we're eating, we're drinking, so therefore we must be safe. And when your body registers that you're ingesting food and you're drinking, the brain shuts down the adrenaline, because obviously you're not in a fight or flight state anymore, because you're now resting and eating. And that once you've had that snack, the adrenaline shuts, because even when you're walking around, if you've got that adrenaline surging, your body, no matter, even if you don't perceive it, your body is postured differently. Your outlook and the way that you're perceiving things are different because you're in a fight or flight state. As soon as you finish eating, you are more relaxed. Your body looks more relaxed. And that makes people more trusting without them realizing why they think you're more trusting.
That's amazing. That is not at all what I expected to come from that question, but I'm so glad it was. That was better than anything I could have expected, but definitely not what I thought this was going.
I'm totally going to start carrying a candy bar with me everywhere just in case.
You never know. It is perfect. It's like whenever you need, I mean, even if you're in a shooting situation or like something goes on, I'm not even joking, immediately eat. It's like a snack on something, because the adrenaline is like, while it's surging, it's letting you, it's narrowing your field of vision. Mm-hmm. It is making your brain race too much, where it's trying to gather too much input. Shut that down as much as possible and think logically. It's like, to help you figure out what you actually need to do, not just, you know, fight or flight.
I just got done reading The Art Thief, Michael Finkel. And it's just a crazy list of very brazen crimes, talking about exactly what you're talking about. Like saying hello to the security guards as you come in, making sure you're talking to the receptionist. And then you're walking out with a $2 million painting.
Exactly.
Great story where he's got a painting under his jacket and he's arguing with a traffic cop over a ticket. And the cop doesn't even think anything other than, this guy's a jerk and I'm still going to give him the ticket.
Right.
Not like look in his trunk. So back on the business side of what you do, I'm curious to the expectations, like your reputation precedes you, but the expectations that the business world has with you, are they expecting like super spy things? Are they expecting like, I think my bank's secure, but I don't know, or were they somewhere in the middle?
In 2016, I started doing, I had an epiphany and I created a whole other discipline of pen testing, as far as I'm concerned, where I do security awareness engagements now. I do not do red teaming. I do not do pen testing. It's like I do security awareness engagements. I guarantee my client at the very beginning of the meeting, our first meeting, that I will get caught during this engagement. I will make sure that every employee that I rob, I will come back to after I finish succeeding and escaping. I will come back and I will talk to them. I am not there to break something and show them where their flaws are. I'm there to help educate their employees and make them better understanding of what kind of threats are out there. It's like, so my whole approach is educational. It's like my whole approach is like, I am using red team tactics, but I'm doing it to educate and to make them better. It's like, and like, once again, I tell people, it's like, I'm your advocate. I'm not your adversary. I am there because red team only exists to make the blue team better. Red team should never have been about punching people in the face or breaking stuff, you know, and seeing where all their flaws are. No, it's like, it's to validate their security, find gaps that they may have so they can patch them. But if your client is not better secured after you leave, you failed. It's not about how good you are at breaking it. How good are you at reporting it? How good are you creating a positive impact to the client? That's the success story. So when I go into a client, they understand they're getting someone who is going to do the very bare minimum basic. I've literally, so many times I can't even count them, walked into a branch or a building or an organization or a three-letter agency without even knowing who the manager was or who the people were or what the building was looked like on the inside, and just walked in and robbed them. Now, if I would have gone in through the skylight and bypassed their alarm system or gotten into their domain admin control and was able to get into the badge reader and stuff, you know, and create my own badge, and then I was able to use a zero day to knock out part of their network so I could get a call back instead of, you know, when I pivoted into their Exchange server, you know what they're going to say to me when I'm done? They're going to go, okay, we're secure. I'm like, what are you talking about? I just showed you how I got in. It's like, yeah, but they're like, but you were like still Team Six. You were like freaking James Bond. It's like, you're Tom Cruise over here. Well, we don't have to worry about those kind of people. It's like, we're not a nation state attack victim. It's like, you know, we're a shoemaker in Des Moines. Why do we have to worry about that stuff? But if I go into a client after I'm done and say, yeah, I walked into this branch, never knowing, been in there before, and 15 seconds, I compromised the first machine. And then within the first 3 minutes, I got the manager to agree to take me to every single machine in your building to compromise it. And he also took me into the server room, your network closet, unescorted, and let me stay there. It's like, and then also let me implant code on the wire machine, the lady who does the wire machines. You would be concerned. It's like, because I just walked in and did that. I didn't have any kind of information. And I got that on video. That's actually a true story. It's like, so yeah, it's like from walking into the front door to get it, to compromise the first machine was 15 seconds.
Wow. That is crazy. Speaking of that, of what you do, is your approach to things is really different and really refreshing. So I want to ask you a question here, because I have a feeling that it's probably going to be different to what other people would answer. But what advice would you have for general businesses to help them secure themselves, right? Is, you know, like, what would you say? Someone that you're not doing an engagement with them, but they have a business. What a little bit of advice would you give them to help them remain secure?
I would say straight out, one of the biggest things is stop trying to get employees to care about your data. That is such the wrong avenue to approach. Security awareness is dead. It's like, I know I just said I do security awareness engagements. That's how I call it because that's how the normal people. What I like when I'm talking about attacks, when I talk about security awareness training, I call it situational awareness training. You need to take time. I'll put it this way. We give employees that have a certain function to do, like driving a vehicle for deliveries, and we give them a piece of equipment. Do we give them the car keys on the first day and just say, okay, yeah, here's the route, you know, you're good? No. You go over them. You tell them how to operate the vehicle in a safe manner. You tell them about the security measures that you have in the vehicle. You tell them that they have to obey the speed limit, that they have to use their turn signals, that they have to lock their vehicle when they go to the bathroom or when they go to on a stop. It's like they're responsible for that equipment. They're responsible for the contents in that equipment. And if they damage it and they use it recklessly, they could be liable or they could be fired. But we have someone start in accounting or HR or development, and we give them a laptop and go, okay, it's like, you know the rules. It's like, you know, don't surf porn. It's like, don't click on unfamiliar emails. It's like, you know, be a good computer user. Thank you. And we expect them to operate that equipment as safely as the delivery driver is. And it blows my mind because if a delivery driver wrecks that $60,000 vehicle, they're probably going to lose their job. But you got people clicking links all the time that can lose a company over $300 million target. It's like, and because of an email. So what we need to do is let every employee know on the first day, this is all you have to do. And if you don't do it on the first day of their job, make sure you re-educate them. It's like, and they get that. And then you start doing it for every person on the first day of the job, is that they realize one simple thing. You are part of the security team. Part of your job requirement, not an elective. It's not a, oh, you also have to do. One of your job requirements is the security of the device that you've been given. And if you do not do that, you could be liable for it or you could be terminated. It's like if it's too egregious. It's like, so you need to understand that you are responsible for that security because employees are going to do what they're paid to do. It's 2023. We don't like do extra. It's like, I'm paying for you, you pay me, okay? It's like this whole company, I'm a company person, it's like, is gone. It's like, you know, it's like, I'm there because I'm getting a paycheck. If you want me to do extra, you pay extra. It's like, so you need to let them know on the day one, this is your job responsibility, not just to make the widgets, but to secure the widgets. It's like, that's what your responsibilities are. And you need to help them with that by not showing them what to do on their company computer, because that's just a wasted effort. Show them how to check the privacy settings on their Facebook or TikTok for their kids to see where their kids are going, to make sure their things are private. Show them how to secure the wireless at their home. Send them company mail, company-wide emails when iOS or Android comes out with a new security update, to make sure they're keeping those things patched. Show them the importance of that. Show them how to secure themselves at home. Because guess what? They still don't care about your data. But that situational awareness that you help foster in them how to keep an eye out in public about certain areas or certain kind of threats that are out there, helping getting them that situational awareness and making them more aware of their surroundings, they'll bring that naturally back to work. They won't leave it at the door. So that's how you do it. It's like you stop trying to teach people to buy. The technology is not going to save us. It's like technology is supposed to be a safety net. It's not supposed to be a wall. We've seen how walls work, okay? It's like it's supposed to be a safety net. So you get the humans to be better prepared to defend your network, and then the computers and the technology will be a safety net if they fail. But if you make it where the technology is that wall, and then you expect the people to, like, you know, catch the slack, you're screwed.
Wow. Yeah, that makes a ton of sense.
I got unorthodox. That's for sure.
I've never worked anywhere that sent me anything like, here, how to check your home security settings. Yeah. Like, here's how to update your router.
You know what else it does? It fosters a sense of communication between security or management and the employees. Because when you think of security, they're the ones that are trying to get me to do something because I did something wrong. When you're able to foster that, it's like that where they start realizing, oh, they're trying to help me out too. They're not there trying to make me slip up and catch me. They're there to make sure I'm protected. They're making sure I'm taken care of. And also, it makes them feel more comfortable if they do make a mistake. They're more quickly to reply to you to let you know that they may have slipped up.
Yeah, I also like the sentiment that you're all on the security team. I think that
every one of them
that has become such a dividing point for all my friends who don't work in security. They're like, oh, the security team yelled at me again. And like, that's the opposite of what should be going on. We should be rewarding the good behavior. And yeah, punishing the bad behavior when it's justified, but it shouldn't feel like a hammer. It should feel like we're being supported.
You talk about rewarding. That's people need to understand. It's like, what's in it for me? It's like, you should go to your company and you should tell them, I need $4,000 a year set aside for employee engagement. And they're going to ask you, what does that mean? It's like, we're going to have a raffle every quarter. And the way that you get a ticket to get into this raffle, very simple. It's like, if you report a suspicious email, you get a ticket. If you report a suspicious email and it turns out to be a real phishing attack, or it was one of the tests that we sent, you get 20 tickets. It's like, if you stop someone from trying to come in behind you, it's like when you're trying to walk in the door and you take them to security, let security know, they'll take your name, you get 10 tickets. It's like, if you see someone who didn't have their screen station unlocked and you took a picture and you locked it for them, it's like, that's a ticket. It's like, and then every ticket gives you another opportunity to win a $1,000 gift card every quarter. They still don't care about your data, but there's something in it for them.
Yeah.
They don't care about the data and they're not going to. I thought that's a hot take. That's controversial. But here, I completely agree with you. Now that you've said all this, like, it totally makes sense. This has been super valuable. We're thankful that you're here. We want to be respectful of your time, though. So we'll start wrapping up.
I got all day. It's like, y'all just have to cut me off when you want to cut me off.
Well, I gotta ask, based on the Wired video you did, where you're answering questions from the internet, this is a bit of a silly off the wall question, but you mentioned like Mr. Robot and hackers in there. But you didn't mention sneakers. And I'm curious, just your gut reaction when someone brings up sneakers to you.
It's an amazing movie. And it is a great movie on hacking. And it is a great movie on red teaming. They were red teaming before red teaming existed. It was one of the best movies and realistic movies on how an attack is planned and scoped and executed. The thing is, that was War Games was cultural.
Oh yeah.
Hackers was cultural. Sneakers was professional. Sneakers was something that was like showing, like, you know, that is, it's not the same. It is like, it was, that is like hacking. Hackers was hackers just being, you know, hackers being cultural, being curious, going out there and rebelling and all this other stuff. War Games, the same thing. Sneakers was when hackers get a job. It's like when hackers become employed and join InfoSec. That's what sneakers was. So there was no dissing on sneakers. I have the ultimate respect for sneakers. It's like, but it's the professional side of hacking, not the cultural side of hacking.
Very cool.
Yeah, I got you. Thank you very much.
I got to confess, I've never seen it. So now I'm going to go watch it.
Oh my gosh, you're depriving yourself. You're going to love it. It's old and dated now. Mm-hmm. Still amazing. Still amazing.
Jim Belushi's best performance, entire career.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Again, I'm adding that to the list. Well, look, we are coming to the end, but Jason, look, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask this. I've heard some crazy stories from you, from some banks and true. Benson, I think in Lebanon, you've broken into places in Jordan, you've broken into EY. What is one of the craziest, could you share one of the craziest stories that you have about the assignment that you did?
One of my craziest stories. Oh my
God. To be honest, you could pick pretty much any of them. They're all pretty wild.
It's pretty weird. It's like, I'm very selective before it's like, now I've got a job where it's like, I'll do any job that I'm paid to do now. It's like, before, when I first started out, I had the luxury of just being able to take the assignments that were weird and unusual and quirky. So, I would say one of the weirdest assignments was, well, there was one where, don't give me arrogance. It's like when I see someone that's arrogant and it's like, and I understand that it's like, and they're proud of their stuff, but that just challenges me. It's like, I look down on myself. It's like, motherfucker, I'm going to make you regret looking down on me. Okay. It's like, that's my job. Okay. That's nobody else's job. I call my haters motivators because they inspire me. It's like, I'm only here out of sheer spite and pettiness. It's like, just to prove people wrong. So when this guy started with this attitude of like, oh, you're not going to get in, there's $1 million security system, it's like, we got all these security factors in, it's like, you're probably not going to get in, but whatever. It's like, oh, that reminded me of another one. But it's like, but then, so I go in for apply for a job application that I'm not qualified for, it doesn't matter. I take a pen from the receptionist, it's like, and fill something out. And then I steal the pen, which is actually important. It's a big pen, you know, like one little dollar big pen with a little cap. And then I have to go to the restroom. It doesn't matter if I have to actually go to the restroom. The way I drink Diet Pepsi, unfortunately, sometimes I definitely have to go to the restroom, which has led to worse problems. But it's like, so it's like, I have to go to the restroom because I get lost going to the restroom. It's like, sometimes it'll take me 2 hours to figure out where the restroom is. It's like, I find the server room, but I couldn't find the restroom. This one was one of those locations where it's like, I misplaced where the restroom was, but I did end up inside their secured area. I mean, like, instantly. And it's like, and this was the first day where I was supposed to do the recon. And then I get to the break room area and they've got this outside patio thing that's accessible from the outside. And their $1 million security had a door, a glass door that was that had a magnet, like a latch. It's like, so the door had a which side had it? I think it was on the door side. I'm not sure. I've got a picture of it, but there was a door with like this rod with this ball at the end. So it's like it would go into the hole in the door frame and it would latch. Well, I looked at that when I was, because I'm always, everything I look at, I can't help, I don't turn this off. This is me just everywhere. Everywhere I look, it's like I'm looking for flaws. I'm looking for something that could go wrong. It's like, I mean, thank you, childhood trauma. It's like I'm constantly looking for worst case scenarios. And so when I see that door, I was like, wait, that's all it's keeping. Oh, I take the pin cap that I stole from the receptionist and slide it over the rod of the door. The door then closes, but it doesn't latch anymore. Oh. So I literally got to go and tell the guy who hired me that I circumvented his $1 million security with a pin that I stole from his receptionist. It's like, and then further on in the engagement, it's like I stole cookies off his desk. It's like, and also a laptop that he had left there. It's like just unplugged and just like turned off. So I was like, yoink, that's mine now too. And it's like, so he was not happy with me.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. I love it so much. The best part is you circumvented $1 million security system with a pen that you stole from there. You can't make that up.
There was another one where I was actually one of the first times I was at the main headquarters of this multinational bank, and I was at it had a skyscraper, and it's like, and I'm up in the upper area, upper floors, and I'm talking to their executives. And this one guy was like, well, we don't expect you to get in, but we want you to know, we just want you to verify what we've got in place. It's like, you know, we're very secure. It's like, you know, it's like, so, you know, so if you don't get, and was just, because I'm a foreigner and it's like, and I'm American, which is, you know, another strike. It's like, so it's like, it was just one of those things. I'm not saying it wasn't deserved, but still it's like, he was just grating on me. And so he's just like, so when would you like to start? And said, you can start. I said, I'll start right now. He's like, what do you mean? He's like, let's go. I'll go downstairs right now. You got a branch right there in your lobby of your main building. He's like, I'll rob that one right now. It's like, but don't you do any rush? No. I'll go down there and rob it right now. Let's do that. And so we literally go on the elevator, get out, and it's like, and I just, they stay around the lobby area and they can see this. And I just walk straight through past the teller area to where they're like, their cubicles are. And you see an empty workstation. I plug in the device. I've already compromised one machine. It's a glass cubicle thing, windows on their cubicles. So this guy behind me sees me. He comes over to me and I was like, thank you. It's like, yeah, this is what I'm doing. And then I get him to take me over to his computer so I can compromise his machine as well. And then I compromise all the machines behind the teller line. And the executives are just like, and he shut up. He didn't talk to me about needing preparation or not being upset anymore. So it's like, so that was good. So yeah, it was, that one was pretty hilarious because it's like that one was done with witnesses. They were so frustrated after that was over.
Wow.
Yeah, because I watched the whole video from start to finish of you breaking into EY. I think you had EY? Glass camera. Ernst & Young, I think in New York or some building like that.
Oh, no, that was a video where I showed how to break into EY online, looking at their blueprints and everything.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
then I robbed the bank. I robbed the bank, full video, unedited. Yeah, you get to see the whole 8 minutes.
Right. Okay. And you had, it's like, because you had a camera in your glasses, I think, or something.
It was a little button camera. It's like, so it was like all James Bond. It was like, it was the unaired footage from the National Geographic show that I somehow acquired from a friend. So it's all good.
Oh, it's amazing. Well, I don't know if Dwayne, you have any more questions. I have one more that I want to ask you.
A million, but yeah, again,
yeah,
we'll make this a 13-hour podcast.
I know. We try and keep these to 30 minutes, but this is no way. There's no way that we could have kept this to 30 minutes. Like, I'm struggling to finish it up here. But we do ask some guests the same questions. You've already given us some pretty amazing good advice for it, but I wanted to ask you, what's bad advice that you regularly hear about security that you just think is ridiculous? What's misconceptions that it's going around of people that hand out advice that's absolutely trash, but it's become standard?
Ooh. You hit a bone on that one, because this just happened yesterday where I started getting really mad about it. So one of the worst advice I've heard in this industry is you have to be X to be this. You have to know programming to be in tech. You have to create tools to be an expert. You have to like do this to be a hacker. You have to know this to be F that noise. I am so tired of people trying to say you have to be this and meet my standards before I will acknowledge the fact that you've got talent. Screw you. I don't need your acknowledgement. I don't know how to program. I know so many other people, a lot of them women, that program way better than I do. And let's not get it twisted, okay? The reason why I made sure I mentioned a lot of women that do that, because mother women started this industry in the 1960s. It's like with the first computer programmers. It's like they didn't get driven out until the 70s or 80s when the men realized, oh, we could make money at this. And now all this crap about we want women back in tech, or we want women in tech. We want women in tech. No, you don't, mother. You want women back in tech. Okay. That's like going around in America right now and going like, where did all the Indians go? Where did all the Native Americans go? Where did all the indigenous? I wonder. It's like, so yeah, don't tell me you want them back when you're still trying to make all these impossible standards that they have to prove to make you feel better. No one should be there to make you feel better or justified. Their talent speaks for themselves. The knowledge that they share speaks for themselves. It's like, I am not technical. I try to make sure people, I have got some technical, I can do some things that are technical, but I make it very, very apparent that I am not trying to be technical. Because I don't want people to think that that's what you have to be successful in this industry. Do you know what this industry needs more than people that can program? They need people who know how to communicate. They need people to know how to write reports. That's what this industry needs more than programmers. They need people that know how to communicate the technical knowledge and the technical challenges that an organization faces, and they need to know how to write that out and communicate that to management and people who are not in information security, who are not technical. Because a CEO's job is not to understand your tech babble. It's like your job is to communicate it in a way that they can understand. So stop talking to me about programming and start learning some communication courses, okay? Start talking to me about how you can impact the people around you, not how good you can code in Python. Sorry. I was not really happy with those people.
I love it though.
I love it.
I don't filter. Sorry.
That's why. This is one of my favorite episodes so far. I'm so thrilled. I'm so thrilled that you don't have a filter, because the gems that come out when you're off filter, when you're passionate about something, I think they're fantastic. But we are coming to the top of the hour. I think I could talk to you all day, but I think I'm going to try and leave some content for hopefully bring you back another time. But Dwayne, do you have any final words or questions for Jason before we click the big red button?
I just want to say thanks very much. And Like I said, I got 1,000 questions, but I'm not going to do a parting shot question because we'll be here for another half hour, I think. But thanks just so much for being here and sharing your knowledge and saying things that just need said out there. I couldn't agree more. I've met so many gatekeepers in my security journey that honestly made me feel bad. But the people that encouraged me and gave me just like that little bit of advice here and there, that's why I'm here today. And I wish there were more people giving out the advice you're giving.
Well, thank you. Thanks. And I have to say, I really enjoyed this 30-minute podcast. It's been great.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to hang out before we actually click over to an hour. But thanks again, Jason. And I look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right. Thank you.